to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, no big stacks of jacks. I'm Tom Holland. It's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Lou Michaels with us, as we do every Thursday morning. SP Futures down 575. Dow Futures down 48. NASDAQ up 75 cents. Yesterday, the Dow and the S&P were down. The NASDAQ was up on the day as the FANGs made their return and went flying up. All those guys were up. Why is Netflix back up, Benny? Are we back at the going back home, or what are we doing? But Netflix was up for a few days in a row. We have Lou, what do you think? What do you make of this? What's going on, buddy? We had a big argument on the show yesterday regarding whether things are getting better or worse in downtown Chicago between Manny and me. What do you think?
Well, I haven't been in downtown Chicago for some time, so all I could say is what I could tell you about downtown Denver. And you know, downtown Denver is getting better. Things seem to be calmer. We're seeing business activity here picking up. Our governor is not as stupid as your governor, so there was a measured phase in of businesses. So things are slowly, very slowly, returning to normal. Although I don't think it's going to be summer officially, normal summer officially, until I see baseball being played, and you know, people gearing up for the kind of large scale open air events that you know we've really come to expect during the summertime.
Well, you see,
that's not happening here, and I know it's not happening there. I was going to ask, has anybody been talking much about what's going on with Major League Baseball? And then I want to talk about what happened in Atlanta last night.
Yeah, see now how articulate you are, and you tell, because of your lawyer training, you just tell one story, and you do it well. I was trying to tell two stories yesterday, and I wasn't doing very good.
I wander. My friends would tell you I wander all over the place when I talk, but thank you.
Well, I was trying to tell, like a dumb economist, I was trying to tell two stories yesterday, and I managed to tell none. What I'm seeing, Lou, and I was trying to explain to Maddie, and it's hard to explain. Everybody is up against the clock. The airliners, the airlines, the businesses downtown, the RTA, you know, the CTA. Everybody's up against a clock where they're deeply in the hole every day. And even though things may look like we're making some progress towards, quote, normalcy, we've got things like now people having signing contracts not to sue people, go back in buildings, and we've got companies telling people that it's all on. All of a sudden, the legalities got involved to where I keep thinking that the goal line keeps moving. And because we're on the clock and nobody's positive yet in terms of rent, in terms of taxation, in terms of everything, I don't know if we're making progress or not. It seems like we are. We're opening some stuff up. There's a few more people in the parking lot. There's a few more people on the train. But the example I used to Manny is, okay, United Airlines is losing $40 million a day. And you say, okay, now you can put 20 people on a plane. Okay, thanks. Well, now I'm losing $39 million a day. I mean, there's still an end date to this game, and you think you're helping me, but you're like the girl who in the Caddyshack, tanks for nothing. You know, I wonder if we're really gaining is what I'm saying.
Well, I think, all right. I think you're clearly seeing progress being made to the extent that the mandatory social distancing and the kind of lockdown mentality. I mean, that's. I think that's disappeared for most people. I think most people looked at the mass demonstrations and the riots and everything else that went on with no really no official challenge from anybody in power saying you people can't be out here because you're going to spread a dangerous disease. I think everybody looked at that and said, "Oh, okay. Well, if in fact people can do this, then I'm not going to worry too much about social distancing in my case." So that's one blow. People are going back to work. They're sorting out the return to work protocols. One of my kids returned to work in downtown Chicago for the first time in, I think, 3 months this week. So I mean, you're seeing that kind of development. I had mentioned, I think, for 2 or 3 months ago, that we were going to have to come to some kind of understanding with respect to liability, so that people could go back in with the idea that, you know, you're going to sort of assume the risk here. You know, if you're going to go out, you're going to assume the risk. And I think people are coming to that understanding. It's pretty funny to watch major sports like baseball wrestle with this issue among their players, when I think the fan base, for the most part, is saying, yeah, you know, if I go to a baseball game, there's a chance I might get sick, but if I'm Maddie's age, or if I'm younger, or maybe a little older, it's not going to be a big deal. It's unlikely to be a big deal, and so I watch the public's attitude on this. I look at the trends. I look at the public commentary, and I think, yeah, we're doing what you and I talked about a couple of months ago. We are gradually growing accustomed to the idea that the disease is out there. We don't have a cure for it. We don't have a vaccine for it. It is at risk that, for most of us, having seen the alternative, is going to be acceptable with some minimal protective measures, and whether that's masks or hand washing or whatever. But I think the public is coming to accept the fact that this is there, and it's, you know, it's something we're just going to have to learn to live with. At the same time, well, so that's one factor. At the same time, you know, the public can look at the, notwithstanding the, you know, the legacy press getting crazy about it, I think the public understands that the mortality rate and the testing positive rate is dropping. And we've, you know, the curve is flatter, and we've come to grips with the initial surge of this stuff, and it seems that it's, you know, it's done its damage, and now we're getting into more of a maintenance kind of level of positives and people requiring hospitalization. And so that's another factor with let's get back to normal. This is a risk now we can understand, as opposed to the, you know, kind of plague risk mental picture that was being created about 3 months ago.
I would agree with you, Lou. I guess on the economic side, I just have a, when I say a different view, I don't have a different view at all. I just get the idea, we are thinking we're making progress here in Illinois, and my brother takes the Rock Island. Instead of one person in a car, there's now three.
The expressways are filling up, though.
The expressway, yes.
People don't want to ride the train
right.
together.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But I'm saying the pace sort of is, it's like you and I laying there with a broken leg, Lou, and the doctor keeps saying, I'm getting there, I'm only 10 miles away. By the time he gets there, we might croak. That's my point. I don't think when Jay Pritzker, and the idea of that we have, when I say this, okay, let's just say when this all started, you were on the show, Manny's on the show, we're all here, we're all BSing back and forth. I would have said that, you know, I remember saying this, everybody has to pick an end date that they reasonably think this is going to end, and they have to make their economic decisions because of it. If we own Lou, Chief, and Maddie's hot dog and bar, we're going to say, all right, we've got this much left on our credit cards, we've got this much in the bank. If this goes for 2 months, we can cover the rent, we can cover everything. But there needs to be some idea of where we're at here. And everybody, even the Fed, we're going to take a three, matter of fact, remarkably the Fed, which is kind of what I'm getting to, we're going to take $3 trillion and we're going to start paying all these people. If people aren't getting paid, we're paying. Don't take any kind of BS whatsoever that your Congress is paying you. The Fed is printing money and paying you. Congress is just a foil at this point. Because they're not going out and borrowing at all. The Fed's coming up with this dough. And this is the part that I think 99% of society doesn't quite get, Lou. And it's the part that really is frosting me. They're going to say, Jerome Powell was on yesterday flapping his lips saying God knows what. But the real fact is, if this drags for another 4 or 5 months, even he is probably not willing to go to like $20 trillion and just keep paying people like there's no problem. I mean, Jay Pritzker, I mean, I don't know if he's not as stupid as whatever, relatively, but we're talking about a guy who does what he's doing here, gets on the phone with Trump, and that would be a bad spot for me, I know. It does nothing but rag at the guy, and like a week later, sends a bill out to Washington to, hey, help us out with our unemployment payments.
Yeah.
I don't think these people get it, Lou. And when you're talking about numbers of this magnitude, I mean, this is essentially a war. This is how much percentage of our GDP the government is spending every day just to prop other people up. If that month goes from July to October, I don't see how the hell that happens. I just don't.
Okay, well, we're talking about sort of different sides of the same coin, or different sides of the same issue. I think the monetary concerns that you're talking about, monetary policy concerns that you're talking about, are lost on the people that the political folks are making these decisions for. So it's not that they don't understand this. It's that they're all thinking about November, and at least at the federal level, they're thinking about November, and they're thinking about, we don't want a mob. We've already had a mob with pitchforks and torches. By the way, there's some really interesting stuff coming out about this Floyd case in Minneapolis right now. But we've already had a mob, and we don't want that. And we don't want to lose the election. And so these are complicated. Monetary policy is complicated. If we come in to tell a bunch of people that, oh, by the way, we've got a pandemic going, and we're going to we've constricted the economy, and we're going to make sure that you don't have enough money to operate, nobody wants is going to vote for somebody who puts that message out. And so the goal is to in the short term prevent this recession/depression or mitigate it and try to ride it out through November. And I don't think anybody's thinking past that. So I hear your monetary policy concerns, and I read the messages you send out to us, and I look at them and go, yeah, this is great, but for the average voter, this is background noise.
And it is, as I've said
many times, that's what drives that. The background noise is not going to get the kind of attention that you want it, because the people who are making or want it to happen, because the people who are making the decisions understand that it's background noise to the voter.
Well, it is until it isn't, Lou. Because I went through,
in our
lifetime, inflation was not background noise; it was the noise.
I know. But it's a complicated background noise, and it can be demagogued way too easily and way too readily. And so if you're a political leader and you go in and say, we've got to worry about monetary policy and we've got to constrict the flow of money, and it's going to have short-term damage, and it's going to cause short-term harm, but in the long term it'll be better for everybody, the reaction you're going to get is, what are you, nuts? We got an election in November.
Well,
we have to carry this through November.
But if it extends out, Lou, and I don't know what your view is of how politicized Washington has become on both sides, but if it extends out to telling the Bureau of Labor Statistics you can't show any inflation till November, now we got a real problem.
But I'm sure that they are looking at every way, they being the people who are responsible for these numbers and who are going to be held accountable for these numbers. I am sure that that the decision makers are telling their charges, figure out some way to make these numbers look as good as possible and get us, you know, get us reelected or get our bosses reelected. And that you know, that's driving the train. And, well, and it's so
if you get elected president, and whoever is going to be there again, to me it's kind of Tweedledum and Tweedledee, but that's one man's opinion. But if you give that
the actual term is Tweedledum and Tweedledummer.
Okay, but if you're going to start giving that person the authority to run like the Congressional Budget Office, to run your Bureau of Labor Statistics, to run your Center of Disease Control, how many people are dying, and say change those numbers. If you start doing that, what is the difference between us and like Russia, for God's sake, or China?
Chief, you know, and you and I have had this discussion, that I believe that to a large extent we're already there, and to a large extent, it because the federal bureaucracy is overwhelmingly Democratic, I think that fudging has already been going on, and has been going on for a while. And so I think if a Democratic president gets elected, I think there will be very little objection within the ranks of the federal bureaucracy to fudge whatever needs to be fudged to help that person.
What makes you think?
I'm still not convinced, by the way, that it's going to be Mr. Biden.
That's possible too, but I don't. I mean, Trump's been there for 4 years. The numbers have been being fudged for 4 years. You can't tell me it's a Democrat doing it.
No, but I think there'll be more. No. I think there'll be more, much more willingness to do it.
Well, I don't. You know, it's interesting. I'm going to ask you. I get a lot of mail, emails. I mean, I'm not going to need snail mail anymore, but emails from a lot of people listening to the show, and a lot of them, I'm going to say most of them are from the right. Well, and the interesting part is they make amazing, I think, sense in arguments, which you do. And at the end of the day, the bottom line is it's always got to be a Democrat behind it, which absolutely frosts the living bleep out of me.
I'm sorry. If I gave that impression, I'm not saying the numbers haven't been being fudged or I wouldn't even say fudged. I would just say right now what the message that's going out is make this look as good as possible and jerry-rig, sculpt the data, things, delay reporting, you know, give a different interpretation, whatever it is to make us look as good as possible.
Well, I just think
there's a lot more willingness to do that within the ranks.
I finally had a fire back, which I never want to do to engage because there's a bazillion people on these things, but it's not one that you get, by the way. It's another one that I'm somehow on a list of. And the guy was ranting and raving about the people that are behind the government, the you know, the deep state people and all this stuff. And at the end of the thing, it's all Democrat, right? And I go, you know, there are people, you can easily make the case to me that there's a power elite in this country that is not Trump or Biden or Pelosi or Schumer. I mean, that's an easy argument to make to me. I mean, but
I think,
you know,
so.
I mean, I'm saying.
I think that. Agreed, and I don't want to get into too much conspiracy.
No, but what I'm saying, Lou, is I'm right now. If you would ask me, who do I think the most powerful man in the country is, I would probably say, sort of like Bill Clinton out of the blue said Osama bin Laden and nobody believed him. I'm going to say the person who has the entire dossier on that guy in Florida that hung himself in jail. He's got crap on 200 people that all have nothing but power. And I got to believe he's controlling some of them, whoever he is. But now, I'm not going to make the jump and say he has to be a Democrat. If I had that kind of power, do you think Caesar cared what party he was in? I mean, the idea that the deep state people have to be liberals. Who cares? If I had that kind of power, would I care if I was liberal or conservative? I'd just be powerful. That's all I'd be, Lou. You could name me everything you want. like Milton Friedman, they said to him, how did you go from being conservative to liberal? He goes, I have no idea. I haven't changed a thought the whole way.
Yeah. Well, let me. Okay, so let's go to talk about local power and how this plays out and how the narratives get sculpted. There was an article published yesterday on Medium.com, which is not a, as far as I know, not a conservative website. And it was written by a reporter I don't know anything about, but it's about the Floyd killing in Minneapolis. And this guy had actually taken the time and the trouble to go into the Minneapolis police procedures and look at what happened with George Floyd and these officers.
People don't want the detail, Lou. They just want the hype.
Well, this is a really interesting article because, you know, the initial, I don't know if you remember, within like a couple of days of this terrible video coming out, the DA from Minneapolis said, this is going to be a very difficult murder claim. I mean, because I think there are factors here that make it very unlikely that this is murder. And all hell broke loose, of course, when he said that, because people said, I could see the video. So this kid goes in, and the article is worth reading. It's long because he's trying to be detailed. But it turns out that, first of all, Floyd was saying, I can't breathe, the minute they started to put him, arrested him, and started to put him into the patrol car. The police were not summoned because he was passing out counterfeit bills. The police were summoned because the shopkeeper who had said he tried to pass $20 bills had indicated he was drunk or impaired or whatever and was outside the store and seemed to be having some kind of problem. The cops get there, and he's immediately, they start talking to him, and they try to put him into the police car. He starts yelling, I can't breathe, I can't breathe, I can't breathe. The Minneapolis police are trained to recognize something called, I believe it's called extreme distress syndrome or something like this, which is apparently a physical / mental condition that causes people to get very agitated. They become very difficult to control. They have a high risk of death regardless of anything you do, whether you arrest them, whether you restrain them, whether you don't restrain them. In any event, the short version of this is it turns out that what the officers were doing with this guy is not only consistent with the police procedure that the Minneapolis police have adopted in terms of dealing with people like this. They were following it to the letter. The pressure on the guy, the putting the guy in his stomach, is something that was specific, and putting and restraining him there was something that this white paper that was published back in 2018 specifically recommends for dealing with people in these circumstances. And so it looks like, based on that instead of this guy being some rogue cop that was running amok, he in fact was following precisely the guidelines of his department.
Did that paper mention anything about the history of these two guys?
No. This is. We'll put that somewhere else for right now.
Okay.
What this guy was doing was it was precisely prescribed by the police procedures manual on dealing with people who the police believed had this kind of condition. That's number one. Number two, he didn't just have an almost or a generally considered to be lethal level of fentanyl in his system. He also had methamphetamines. And so this drug cocktail was working on him at the same time that he was panicking and at the same time that the police were trying to deal with this and were restraining him. Third thing is that the knee in the back procedure that this guy was using was also something, as I said, that was consistent with Minneapolis police policy. And in fact, the pressure that this guy was using did not appear to be so excessive that Floyd couldn't raise his head, couldn't you know get his head up off the ground, and couldn't breathe. And that there's a discussion in the newspaper article about pressure and how much pressure this guy was likely
to put
on
him
and all that.
Do you think the world wants the facts to invade a good story here?
Well, this is what I mean. So all of this comes out in this obscure article in this relatively small online web publication.
All right, so if it comes out in trial and the guy's declared innocent, then what? We're going to riot again?
Well, that's the whole point. This kid was this reporter was writing this saying, look, this you're not talking about a murder conviction here. If in fact this guy comes, this evidence is true and correct, and it all comes out of the trial, you're going to see the points are the cop was doing the procedure that the Minneapolis Police Department had developed to deal with this individual. This individual, in addition to having this, or appearing to have this syndrome, which I think is just based on the terror or the result of your adrenal glands just wringing themselves out and pumping all this adrenaline into your system. In addition to suffering from this syndrome, he had a lethal a mixture of drugs in his system, and he had an underlying heart condition. And the cops are basically doing what they have been trained and instructed to do in this circumstance. And so you throw all that in there, and now you get in front of the jury and say, A, is there any issue of intent? As long as this guy was following the procedure, the intent doesn't even enter into it. He was doing what he was trained to do. He was doing what the Minneapolis Police Department had specifically recommended you do in these circumstances. At that point, a jury looks at this and goes, okay, so what else was going on here? The drugs, the medical condition, everything else. Is there a reasonable doubt as to what killed this guy? Never mind murder. I don't think you get a manslaughter conviction. And even if you do, if a jury says, yeah, we think that's there, you've got, I think this officer's going to have qualified immunity.
Lou, the part you're missing.
Under any kind of federal standard anyway.
Lou, he's already been convicted by the court of public opinion.
Well, and that's what I mean. Yeah. You know, so when you talk about the power structure and the people who are controlling things, why isn't this information getting out? Why isn't the, instead of the district attorney or the attorney general of Minnesota, who, by the way, supports Antifa protesters, when this guy doesn't reduce the charge and doesn't come out and try to say, look, here's what actually happened and here are the facts, here's what we were doing, here's why this happened, instead of doing that, he actually ups the charge. And I'm going, come on, man. All you're doing now is you're making it almost impossible.
Well, Lou, as an attorney, my buddy the attorney a couple doors away, tell me that the defense is never supposed to talk before the trial. The prosecutors do it all the time. Because that's just what's happening. Is prosecutors get in front of a microphone, and they can do whatever they want to do. They can roll with public opinion. They can do whatever. That's why in a normal murder case, when they go out and make a big splash in the paper, you want the trial like 3 years later, and everybody's forgotten about it, and then you can actually bring out the facts.
Yeah, I mean, this is not a Laquan McDonald situation with the video. This is not a Rodney King situation. This is something else.
I would agree.
And so, I mean, I look at this, and we're talking about this with some friends, and one of them said, you know, they're going to plea this down, and I'm going, no, they're not, because the police union is not going to let this one go. Not when they've got evidence like this. And again, I'm going off of one reporter's article.
You're not a John Wayne fan, Lou. When the facts,
yeah, it links to, I know.
The facts conflict with the fable, legend, print the legend.
Yeah, but unfortunately in this case, the legend has, the legend doesn't have a published paper that is on the Minneapolis police website that says, here's how we handle these kinds of cases.
We're in a spot right now, Lou, is this thing has caught fire. like this, it doesn't, it almost doesn't matter what drugs or anything the guy had in his system. Nothing will be considered contributory on his part in a lot of people's minds. And that's pretty scary. S&P futures down 12, NASDAQ futures down 11. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter: the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right
now. Load up, big Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Agitated, Mr. Matt Weber. We have Mr. Luke Michaels. S&P futures up 17. NASDAQ futures up 25. Dow futures, down. So we're used to saying up, man. What the hell? We're supposed to be up every day, right? And now all of a sudden we're down. Dow futures down 128. We had the second day of Jerome Powell's testimony yesterday. And he didn't say all that much. Although I did write some stuff on what I thought was the truth and what he actually says, but that's another story. DAX down 92.7, and these guys have been up all week.
Which you should read, by the way, because it's pretty good.
Well, I mean, you just wonder what, well, whatever. I could read it, I guess. A FTSE down 44.7, getting around down 51%. So we're down some, but like I said, we have been up. Nikkei down 100. Now, they're down 2 days in a row, but they're up like 700 on Monday. So we're just working that off a little bit. Shanghai up 3. Call that flat. Hang Seng down 16.07. Matt, even though you just listened to this, isn't it amazing that the whole Hong Kong thing is, we haven't talked about that in 2 weeks, have we? And 2 weeks ago it was a crisis, and now nobody even cares. It's just amazing how this stuff bounces off and on the news. Bonds, U.S. 10-year, 0.7, Bund, minus 0.43. Japan hanging in there above zero at 0.01. Oil up 34 cents, 38.30. It's been right in this 37 to 40 range now for quite a while. Brent up 49 cents, 41.20. Natural gas unchanged at 163. RBOB 121. That's in the high end there. Gold down 490, 1730. Silver down 2 cents, 1775. So pretty calm there. This one is one you want to watch. I keep threatening to do a position here, and then well, there is no copper ETF that I know of. There's a couple stocks that used to be copper. One of them is FCX, Freeport-McMoRan, but now they've, even that's gotten cloudy because they bought a gold company, so they're sort of two-thirds copper, one-third gold, so that's a hard one to trade too. So there's really not anything that I can point to you to just, if you want to get along this copper, but it also is part of the Chinese idea. How do you know when China's doing better? Copper goes up. Well, 261 is not the $3 you almost like it to be, but it's better than the 248 it was, so whatever. Take that in a dime and try and get a, find a payphone, Maddie. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
39 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have a crash on the outbound Ryan at Roosevelt Road blocking the left lane, and this is causing congestion on the Ryan and on the Stevenson as well. So keep that in mind as you're heading into downtown. But this is on the outbound side, blocking the left lane at Roosevelt. That's our only crash in the area, but it's affecting some of the south side expressways. Further out, though, away from downtown, no issues on the Ryan or Bishop Ford as you're coming inbound until you get closer to the circle. Same for I-57. Stevenson, as I mentioned, is pretty backed up as you're approaching downtown. Eisenhower looks good.
The reason why it's blowing up is they had another shooting on the way out, which we can't talk about. And it has been closed like all night going out from Ryan to Damon.
Yeah, there's no closures right now, but yeah, that I haven't read about that, but I'll take your word for it that happened overnight. But no resulting closures or investigations from that. So if that's the case, that part's over. But there is congestion, I think, from this crash on the Stevenson. No issues on the Eisenhower. Kennedy and Edens are looking okay until you get to the circle. That's when things are starting to slow down right now. There was a shooting investigation, though, on State Street, according to this, between Randolph and Lake that has State closed for a police investigation. That happened, it looks like, at about 5 o'clock this morning. 7 CTA buses are being rerouted due to this investigation downtown that has State Street closed. Off the expressways, we're looking okay. No issues or accidents to report. Weather today, it's going to be another beautiful day, similar to yesterday. Sunshine, warm temperatures, a high of 80, a bit warmer inland. Right now it's crystal clear and 70 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 103 today. Right now it's clear and 78. On this day in sports history, 20 years ago today, June 18th, 2000, Tiger Woods played in the 100th U.S. Open and won his first U.S. Open by a major championship record, setting 15 strokes. I remember that one well. He beat Ernie Els and Miguel Angel Jimenez in blowout fashion, winning by 15 strokes to win his first U.S. Open. Chief.
Yeah, that was pretty special. We missed a couple of things this week with all the stuff we're talking about. Last Saturday, we didn't even mention D-Day, Maddie.
Yeah.
And on Monday, you missed, I'll blame you, you missed, it was the 50th year anniversary of the death of Brian Piccolo.
Brian Song.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Spectacular guy. Everybody met him. Anybody who met him liked him. So where does that put Gail? 70-something, huh? 75?
I would say you're pretty close.
Yeah.
Gail Sayers, who I've met dozens of times because he was a contributor to the Score when I was there, a terrific man, age 77. He turned 77 on May 30th.
The couple times we went to the golf outings, somehow or another, the only... How's this sound, Maddie? Who was the guy who was mid-morning in those days? And they booted him.
About Murph?
Murph.
Mike Murphy?
Nice guy. Super nice guy. The rest of them, I don't think I've said more than one word to him when out. I don't know what to do with those other guys. I wasn't really big on any of them. But with the golf outing, I talked to Murph for a long time, and I must have talked to Gail for an hour. And I never met the man. I don't think I've had a nicer conversation with anybody for an hour.
Yeah, every time I met him, he's a terrific guy, very down-to-earth and friendly and welcoming. Still has a chip on his shoulder. Doesn't feel like he gets the recognition that he deserves. if you ask him about it, he'll tell you.
Well, he was always telling me.
Which is interesting because certainly in the 1970s, and you know, shortly thereafter, his name, even though his career was you know, significantly truncated, his name comes up in any discussion of great running backs in the last, you know, 100 years in the NFL. I mean, I was just about to say, the only guy that I ever saw that made, you know, had moves like that and made people, you know, just sort of look stupid on a football field was Sanders, with Detroit.
Yep.
And they sort of had comparable running styles, but Sayers, I've never seen him. When my father was coaching, I mean, I remember the only films he looked at were the defensive films, and that's what he brought home. But he brought home some of the Bears offensive stuff just to let me look at it. And he said, you know, just watch what he said. This is what one of the once in a generation talents looks like. And he said the other guy that he said that about was Brown. And you know, those two guys in the 1960s, two of the most unbelievable athletes that I've ever had the pleasure of watching. And and Sayers was I just find it interesting for him to think that he believes he doesn't get the respect that he deserves. I mean, his name was on everybody's lips as one of the best ever. And maybe that's not good enough for him. I don't know.
They never came close to a playoff game.
Yeah, I think it's more the fact that, you know, his career got cut short by injuries, and because of that, he's not in any of the, you know, like leading rusher lists or anything like that, and so he sort of gets left behind because of that. But people that saw him play, like you did, Lou, recognize that he probably is a top five talent of all time.
Oh yeah.
Well, you can't
look at that. You can't look at that film, and not, you know. Again, it's the same reaction I had with Brown. You see the guy out on the field, and or with Jordan, you see the guy out on the court or out on the playing field, and you say, this guy and the people that are out there with him, who are all professionals, are not playing the same game he's playing, and that's. That's just the way I feel that way about Sayers. I feel that way about Brown. I felt that way about Sanders. I felt that way about Reggie White and Lawrence Taylor on the other side of the ball. I felt that way about Alan Page.
Yeah,
watching what he was doing. It really is that kind of a, you see that kind of an athletic talent. So rarely.
You remember Eddie O'Bee's comment about when he was a rookie or first time he played against Jim Brown? He goes, "This guy can't be so tough." He goes, I get off my block early. He comes at me. I nail him, and then I hear the loudspeaker go, "Second and three."
Yeah,
because I hit him in the backfield. he was that strong and that fast. And Dick Butkus said, and he played against him in the college All-Star game, and said he was just a little bit faster and just a little bit stronger than anybody he'd ever played against, and he thought that he may have just played against the best player he'd ever played against in his career, and he said he never saw anybody better, except for maybe Gale. It's a whole different. But you know what I think about Sayers, though, Lou, if you watch him real carefully, which I'm sure you have, for a bigger man, the thing he did differently than just about anybody else is most people, when you, and even me, a big slow guy, when you make a cut, you pretty much cut off the balls of your feet. If you watch Sayers, he was almost a different kind of human. He cut off his heels. So when he went into a cut, he damn near stopped, and the other guy just went right by him. It was, if you watch some of the slow motion videos, it doesn't look like a regular person. I mean, when his foot hits the ground, especially on like a muddy field, he's the only guy that's got footing. It's really strange, and you wonder if he would have played on. He's the kind of guy that, as the artificial turf fields first started, and one was worse than the next, I'm going to say that I would have bet he would have run out of his own knee on one of those fields. Did he cut that? he cut that.
Yeah, that's a possibility. The comment that I, and by the way, Butkus was another once in a generation talent. I watched him run, what I thought was, this is a guy who is always, always under control. No matter how fast he's moving, no matter how much acceleration he's putting in there, no matter how, you know, much speed he's got and he's developed up in the open field, he always seemed to me to be ready and able to make a cut, a change of direction, a shuffle, whatever. He was always under control. You almost never saw him slip. No. You almost never saw him, you know, his instinctive moves, his body always caught up with whatever his brain was making the decision to do. And that's just sort of the way I described him. And, you know, Sanders was kind of that way as well.
What was his famous quote, Lou? Gail.
I don't know.
Give me 18 inches of daylight. All I need.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. That's and the scary thing is that those guys, you know, Brown, Sayers probably could have run like this if his mind worked that way. The thing was that Brown, of course, didn't need that. Brown, even if there was no daylight there, except for a few very rare circumstances, Brown could make his own, you know, make his own hole because he was so strong and his momentum was so.
He's better, a better player, but in terms of balance and size and speed, he's like a John Riggins. I mean, how does somebody that big have that kind of balance? But you see defensive linemen with it all the time. I mean, Alex Karras could have been a ballet dancer, for God's sake. Talk about light on his feet. I mean,
That's the other frightening thing is, and again, until you're around these guys all the time, and when I was working at the training camp and when I, you know, was around my father, a lot more, that was one of the things that he always focused on with his linemen and with the defensive guys. And that is you don't really understand how quickly, not necessarily fast over, 10, 15 yards, but how quickly in the space of 2 or 3 feet guys can move and are how well balanced they are. Anyway,
there was a guy, real quick, I'll make this brief. There's a guy at Notre Dame, those who may remember, he was responsible for, well, mainly responsible for the term the Sports Illustrated jinx. He was a freshman that started at Notre Dame and they came out of, I don't know where the hell he came out of, but the first game he played was against Purdue, and one of my buddies was buddies with the offensive line, one of the guard on Purdue, and Notre Dame had a guy that they were touting for All-American, this tackle. And so after the game, the phone rings in this guy's dorm room, and it's his buddy from Purdue, and he goes, "That guy that you guys are touting for Hall of Fame, like, he's crap. Who's that freshman? We started double-teaming him on the second play." and this guy was just one of these kind of bulky looking guys. He's 6'1", 265, not shredded or anything. Lou, I played pool with him one night, and I'm watching the guy walk around the table. It was like his feet never touched the ground. Remember the line in The Hustler where Eddie Felsen says about Minnesota fats? Look at the fat man when he walks around the table. He looks like a ballet dancer.
Yeah,
you know, it's the same thing. I mean, these guys have it. There's a different. Their knees just go higher. Everything is just different about him. That's why the fridge could jump up on a 3 foot table at the size he was with both feet and not even. What's your buddy from Houston, Maddie? What, he can jump out of a 3 foot pool?
Yeah, supposedly.
A what? I mean, can you imagine even thinking you could do that, Lou?
Jesus. No, I mean the guy that I knew personally who I still touch base with occasionally is Ed White, who looked. I mean, he I won't say he looked dumpy, but he did not look like somebody who was, making his living knocking people down, but who could run, was at 270 or whatever he played at in the 1960s, was a sub-5-second guy on the 40 and could get out. Well, he was the model my father used for offensive linemen, which was, you know, I want guys, I want big fat guys pushing on other big fat guys as an offensive line play. I want guys running, and I need guys who are at full speed after two steps, you know, making these impacts. So I wanted to touch on what happened in Atlanta last night and just talk a little bit about one of the things that seems to be this consensus that seems to be developing around the public employee unions issue, and just get your guys' take on this, because no city, I mean, I think there are very few cities that are as in much in the grip of it, their public employee unions as Chicago, and obviously the police union is one of the big ones. What happened in Atlanta last night? The Atlanta district attorney charged one of the cops with involved in the shooting of this gentleman Brooks, who was the guy running through the parking lot shooting a taser at them. He was charged yesterday with felony murder, which has a potential death sentence. It's like first degree murder, and as a result, there was a major sick out, blue flu call out in Atlanta last night. As the police union, the police just said, we're not engaging in this. We're not coming to work. And more importantly, and this was reported, I assume it happened, when the Atlanta mayor started to panic because she realized that people weren't coming in and they couldn't handle the volume of calls they were getting, she reached out to surrounding jurisdictions for police support, and they told her no.
I don't blame them.
Yeah. So this, you know, this is the start, I think, of the backlash, and it was one of the reasons I mentioned that article in the previous segment, because if this, as this information comes out, and as you said, Chief, the political people do not support the police, notwithstanding some of these facts coming out, what do you think the reaction is going to be? And are we going to start seeing, finally, some pushback on this public employee union deal? I'm not, as much as I understand what happened in Atlanta last night, I'm not in favor of police, you know, in union form or otherwise, engaging in some kind of selective
Chicago,
action
that
Chicago, causes a decrease in public safety.
Well, I'm in the middle on this. I think that the video was pretty friggin' awful. But that doesn't mean that there might not be another video, another point of view. That's why we have a trial. And I'm guessing that the policeman went a little overboard in Minnesota, because I'm looking right at it. But I'm not about to be the jury without seeing the other side's story. And we have an awful lot of people.
I encourage you to read that article.
Well, I mean, I think if I'm on the jury, I'm going to be reading a lot of stuff and seeing a lot of stuff. And I don't like the group that just says, I saw it, I'm judge and jury, because everybody always gets a defense, and there's always something on a jury, I think, that you didn't think about that the other side brought up. And you can't, is there enough in that video to charge the guy? Yeah. Is there enough to convict him? No, he gets a defense. And then maybe he doesn't have any defense, but maybe he does. And I want to ask you a question, Lou. Mayor Lori here is now starting to do this, it's catching fire all over the place. Now, you would think, you know, a dummy like me would think that if you have a test for a position and they go through training of however many weeks, what's the police training, Matty? 10, 12 weeks?
I think so.
You're kind of a rookie for a while, that you're sort of, you've been sort of vetted. Now she wants those guys to be licensed, like by the state or something. So
licensed to do what?
Licensed to be a policeman, like licensed to be a barber. Or me licensed to be a stockbroker. So in other words, she can
they already do that.
Obviously, it's different, because your buddy Greg last night was telling me that it's genius, because if you don't like what somebody does, you can pull their license.
Oh, somebody's going to have to explain to me how, in a collectively bargained work environment, you are now suddenly going to introduce a separate qualification that the union will not have control over.
Why do you think I brought it up to you? I'm saying that's the rage. And now she wants the police to be licensed. Right, I imagine so by the state. I'm not sure. Maybe you think it's the state? It must be.
Let's break this down. It sounds like what she wants to do is put people in the shoes of like hairdressers.
Yeah.
And say, you know, you don't have a license to be a police officer, you can't be a police officer.
Correct.
I'd love this. I think what she's trying to do is to say, we're not going to even consider you for union membership until you have this license in your possession.
I don't think it's. I don't think. Betty, help me with this because you've been listening to.
I've never heard this before.
Okay, no, it's been true. I've heard her say. I think it has more to do, Lou, with not so much the getting the license that's the thing. Being able to pull it easier seems to be the theme.
You got to collectively bargain for that.
I didn't say it was all thought out. I just thought I'd be asking you, you know.
Yeah, so you go to the union and you say, okay, we're going to introduce a new job qualification, these positions. It's licensing. And the first thing the union's going to say is, you're full of it because we already license police officers.
Right. We give them a badge. That's how they got the badge. The badge is their license.
Exactly. That's what the police academy's for. So that's number one. Number two, you want to introduce this requirement that you have out there. We're going to have complete control. We're going to have at least equal control over any licensing decision, unquote, that you want to make. You're not going to pull somebody's license. If you want to make this a requirement, you're going to have to bargain for it, and we are not going to allow you to pull somebody's license for any reason other than the reasons we have already for suspending a police officer.
Well, she wants the guy who, you know, and I'm listening to this, and it's not like I don't really dislike anybody, but one of the policemen in the midst of the riots flipped somebody off. And she said, well, I want that man fired. Well, okay, I'm not so sure that that's a firing offense necessarily. I don't know. Who knows if the guy hit him with a rock or whatever he did first. I mean, I'm not saying he did. Again, that's why you have trials. And 2 days later, she gives the big F you to the president. It's not like she doesn't like the language being used, like she's your third-grade nun. It's like she gets to use it, you don't.
Well, but that we know she's that kind of a person.
Yeah.
She's that kind of a mayor. She got her hair cut.
Yep.
You know, while the rest of the city was getting shaggy. So we know she doesn't care about standards, and she knows that the law is for other people and not for her because she's one of the special people.
Yep.
I think the idea of licensing is one of these facile kinds of comments and ideas that again is being tossed out to people because it sounds good and they don't really think about it. But you know, if she's dealing with a collectively bargained workforce that for which any change she wants to make in terms of job qualifications or suspensions or hirings or firings, that's all got to be collectively bargained.
Lou, that's very frustrating when you know more than anybody else. We got a dash, buddy. You'd rather just be a dictator, right? SP Futures now down 28. Wow. NASDAQ Futures down 43. We've made a movement here. Come back, Mr. Fryhamzy.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, Audrey Johnson at Realtor.com. That's Audrey Johnson at Realtor.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Oh, and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. Matt Weber. S&P futures down 29.50. NASDAQ futures down 45. This just happened. We're so used to being up. We had the Fed chairman 2 days in a row, once in front of the Senate and once in front of the House, answering questions. And a lot of interesting stuff came up, man. I mean, there's some pretty good questions, I thought. A lot of them were had to do with, you know, how big is this? How are you going to tone this back down when things go, quote, back to normal? Nobody really accosted him as being, you know, really bad decisions out of the gate, which I probably would have. I mean, I think that they're the impression, you know, you and I have been silently discussing things is because I don't think we've ever seen, in the time you and I have been together, the many different levels of conversation people can have on any topic. I mean, even what we just did with Lou, it's, was that a pretty horrible video? Yeah. Does that mean he doesn't get a defense? No.
He didn't get a defense.
No, I'm saying a lot of people have already made up their mind, is what I'm saying. Is that, and maybe the evidence of that would lead most people to make up their mind, but you still got to sit in the back of your mind, maybe I don't have the whole story, you know, and you have to pause just a little bit. I mean, and I'm seeing that kind of shrink from society that once I've made my decision, I'm never going to change it no matter what. You can't talk me out of it. And it's surprising to me as I get older and really read and study more than most people, not everybody, how many times I'm wrong in something I read or thought, I mean, and things. And, that's the thing, one of the things that frosts me the most about the Jay Powells of the world and the politicians is they are out on a limb nobody's ever been in. And they make it sound like they got it all figured out. That there's no, I mean, for God's sake, if he screws up, if he all of a sudden makes it to $15 trillion and we still aren't any better as an economy and as a society, I mean, I don't think the COVID will, God, I hope it won't last that long, but I mean, if he screws up, and all of a sudden we've got this massive inflation, we've got debt all over the place. I mean, the debt was up 11.2% nationwide, people and governments, in the second quarter. I mean, you better, it's our discussion on the way in, you better be damn sure that we're back to normal by August 1st, because if you start putting 2 3/4 like that together, or how do we even recognize the place? I mean, if you're wrong, you know what I'm saying? Sometimes you end up, there was a time in World War II, Manny, when the Battle of Britain, where the Nazis are bombing a place and the RAF is fighting them with like kind of less people. They got to, I was reading this in what book it was The Winds of War or whatever it was, but they got to a day where every single British squadron was engaged. That was it. They were the rubber band was as far pulled as you could have done it, and they had a pretty good day, and the Germans somewhat backed off the next day, and then they got weather help the third day or something. There's no way that could happen 3 days in a row. They just got there and they said this is it, and I worry about the Fed. This is it, because now you're educating people that there's a spigot there that'll never run dry. I mean, you can't go through the day listening to national TV where you don't find somebody. Yesterday the politicians, we need to extend this $600 month for the end of the year or 2 years. Manny, they're just printing it and selling it. I mean, sending it. I mean, we're not even close to borrowing it and going. We're beyond the going into debt part. We're just printing it. I mean, I can't even dream that this is what's happening. I mean, do you have any idea? I know you don't have an idea. I mean, do you think most people have? It's not like we're going out and borrowing the money from you and your brother and your wife and saying we're going into debt for this. We're not even bothering to do that. We're just running it off.
Listen, I agree with you, but I was telling Dan this the other day. I was having drinks and appetizers with the basketball team on Monday night, and I was talking to one of my buddies who has way more degrees than I do and is a successful partner in a law firm and, just bought a house and life's very good. And he said, but he's very, very liberal, and he said that who cares? If print money, get people out of this, we'll grow out of it, and it doesn't matter.
That's the new mantra.
And it's hard to argue. I mean, I think he's wrong, but we've been doing it for 10 or 15 years now, for the most part.
Yep.
And, the world hasn't ended. So I don't know. Maybe it doesn't matter.
The answer, like anything else, Matt, is it never matters till it matters. We'll grow and we'll get out of it. And that's, I have, when we first started the show, and I actually put it in one of my books here. Now I can't find it. It's not just laying around. There was a piece of paper by somebody that said just about every economic crisis that the government runs into is a business cycle crisis, where, you know, people get out of their skis a little bit, they borrow too much, blah, blah, blah. It's almost a healthy thing to a certain extent. And what you do is the politicians make a bunch of noise, they act like they're doing something, and the economy recovers itself. It grows its way out of it. And I'm going to say, in virtually every post-war recession that has been the case, and just about all of them pre-war, when I say war, World War II, there's a couple times that stand out. One is the Great Depression, where it was a balance sheet depression. You ripped savings out of people that was non-recoverable. Even if they ended up getting a job a few years later, they still had that hole. And in 2008, you did the same thing. People lost, essentially put their life savings in a house, 40 grand or 20% down payment, and 2 years later it was gone. Well, it takes a long time. I don't care who you are, and maybe if your buddy's an attorney, it doesn't take so long. Although, I'll bet he's not doing so hot right now either. It takes a long time for anybody to save up 40 grand at any day and age, including now.
No doubt.
And so, or if your parents saved that up and gave the 40 grand to their three kids and said, here's a down payment on a house, knock yourself out. Now you've essentially, that spigot's off, right? Because, I mean, I don't think you need another 40 grand on the parents unless you got Daddy Warbucks there.
I wouldn't think so.
And, now it's sort of the same thing. I mean, we're back in this balance sheet type thing. But the idea is we can always just grow out of it, or don't worry, next year will be better. That's what we all hope. That's America. That's the way it's always been. But like you say, the last, we've left, I mean, your buddy, he doesn't want to listen to me, I'm sure. He'd be aghast that the median income of an individual is only up $4,000 in the last 10 years, 20 years. He'd be aghast. He'd say, well, that can't be right. You know, when the legal profession compared to my profession, well, I was never a retail trader in those days when I was on the floor, but people used to pay like $9 for an option. Right? or I'm talking about a market order, not something somebody's doing for you. And now there's places, you know, dollar and a half, two, some 50 cents. I mean, and yet a lawyer back then was charging $200 an hour, and now he's charging six. Out of all the professions there are, they get to manage the amount of people that become lawyers, right? They get to say how many law schools there are. And they've managed to hang it out. Now, as the economy's gotten worse, as one of my attorneys, but he says, it's not the billing, it's the collecting, right? And you're constantly giving breaks to people. But those guys have managed to hang in there to the point where, and I'm not giving your friend a bunch of crap, but with but I'm saying how many people do you know, and what you make per hour, what I make per hour, even the managed money I do, how many can pay somebody else $6.50 an hour? Unless he's friggin' Abraham Lincoln, for God's sake. These guys all think they're worth $6.50 an hour. Sorry. I mean, right?
I agree.
And there was a guy, as a matter of fact, he just passed away. He used to come to the...
And I think he's billing like half that, but
okay,
still.
But even so, three-somethings an hour is real number.
Yeah, absolutely.
And one of the guys who used to come to the Tripoli, he just passed away recently. He's one of these guys, man, he went out, I don't know if you ever met him. The guy's name was Todd. I won't give a last name. Not our Todd, upstairs Todd. He was the guy that came out of law school, maybe lacked a little self-discipline. He came out with huge debt, right? And then, of course, he ran up his credit cards, too. So he was always kind of... But he never... No big law firm ever wanted him. So he would do, whatever you want to call it, side work for big law firms. They'd get a big case. And he's a bright kid, bright guy. And he would do a lot of research for them. And they were paying him $35 an hour and billing him out at $350.
Yeah.
That's special.
Yeah, it is.
When you start talking about getting a bill from a week's worth of law for three people and it's, you know, $100,000, who the hell can pay that?
It's crazy.
I mean, it's...
You can see why so many people want to be lawyers out there.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think whatever we do, the idea that, don't worry, it's always been that way. You know, you can always tell that, who talks like that, are tenured professors. You know, 10 or 15 years, you're not going to remember any of this stuff. Yeah, but I'm not getting a paycheck. You are. 10 or 15 years is a lot shorter time when you're a tenured professor than it is when you just got thrown out of work.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all a question of point of view, right? One of the greatest lines ever, and actually, I mean, she's been on the show a bunch of times, so I don't want to give her a bunch of crap, but Diane Swank. I don't know if you were around when she was on. But
yeah, we've had her on a few times. Well, should I have her on again.
Oh, yeah. She gave a speech for Mesro, and I couldn't believe she said it. I think, as soon as she said it, she's like, oops, what did I just say? She goes, I know what a recession is. One of my girlfriend's dad lost his job during a recession. I'm going, oops. One of my girlfriend's dad lost his job. I know what a recession is. that's a little distant.
Yeah,
just
one
saying.
Of my girlfriend's dad.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't think she does.
All right, Manny, you're gonna have to be blue here on the where I was. We were discussing on the way in. I think that they're just gonna be. What I'm seeing, maybe I'm getting jaundiced here, because I see these exchanges. And my buddies over at the Series Cafe struggling to open. Now, who knows if the Board of Trade really wants some, but I think the SIBO does because they get rent out of their place. It's just so easy for them to go, well, is anybody else open? Nah, well, let's make it, let's not say June 1st, why don't we say June 21st? Then you say, is anybody else down there? Is anybody riding the trains? We don't want to be first. No, let's make it July 1st. I mean,
that's what Tulsa mayor just said, who is a Republican, but about the Trump rally that's coming to town, I think tomorrow. And he said, you know, I wish it was some other city because I'm pretty conservative by nature and I don't want to be first.
Yeah.
To have, you know, 15 or 20,000 people, whatever it's going to be, inside of an arena, essentially. He goes, I don't want to be, I don't feel very comfortable being the first to host a closed air arena event like this that's at capacity crowd. And so I don't think he's attending.
Well, Manny, I think you should never have had sex till you had it before.
Well, I mean, you know, you can take it to any extreme you want, but just try to look at it logically, and it makes sense.
It makes sense to not do it, or makes sense to not be first?
It makes sense to be nervous about being first. Anytime, like, for example, we have a software platform that we sell as a service to big, you know, conservative, stuffy banks, you know, that are old as dirt and move very slowly and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, anytime we do a new release, right, and we have to do some sort of migration or conversion to the new platform, which happens every few years, you know, you update things and revamp things and give things a facelift. Every time we bring it to their attention, what do they always say? Well, we don't want to be first.
Right.
So can you make sure that you do it a couple times so there's no bugs or anything and you work out the kinks and then we'll do it. So we learned that, and basically we just had to start setting hard deadlines and saying, okay, we have to move everybody by this date. You get to pick when you want to do it, but it's going to happen by this date whether you like it or not. And that was the only way we could get anyone to move.
But
so someone maybe needs to say, like, okay, you can do it anytime you want, but on this date, everyone reopens.
Well, but you end up with, here's what you get. You end up with somewhat, look at how many people we used to have on the show that can't come on now because their compliance people say you can't come on here. Because now the thing is, why should you be on because you're liable to say something? Well, what are you liable to say? I mean, the people of Lakeside Bank, Andy used to come on every day or every week. And what did Andy ever say that was out of school? He just said,
never. He talked about mortgages.
The mortgage, and he gave you the current rates of the morning. The new compliance guy, oh, God, no. He's liable to say something that we're going to be liable for. For what? I mean, you can get this paralyzation by just being, somebody always has to be first no matter what it is, man. I mean, when people talk about the guys at Pullman, one of these old crotchety dudes, which maybe I'm becoming, he said something about leadership is when eight guys are in a room, one guy drops something in the middle of the table and he goes, here's a plan, here's my plan, it's a good plan, anybody got any other ideas? And the answer is usually no. That's leadership. Right? And somebody might read it and say, well, we could tweak this a little bit, and he goes, that's fine, let's tweak a little bit. But there's gotta be one guy to put, you know, the thing out there. Any basketball game. Somebody's gotta pick the first guy, right? You know, what a baseball, you shove the bat, you put your hands up, and if your hand made it to the end, you got first pick.
That's right.
I mean, somebody has to, I mean, you're never going to have sex until one of you says, hey, you want to come home with me, right? You used to always be the guy, but now I don't know about that. But
no, I think you're right, but you don't have to be the first. I mean, somebody will be the first, but you don't have to be the first. When you are a company or an organization that has the infrastructure where you don't need people to come back to the office, so you can field calls at home, you can do your meetings at home, you can obviously work, you know, respond to email and things like that at home. Why would you rush to be first? Why wouldn't you let someone else that's not as set up as you, that has to reopen, let them reopen, let them deal with any of the pushback and complications, learn from it, and then reopen?
I'm with you 100%, except if I put you in the chairman spot, which, God, I can't believe I'm saying this, someday you might actually be a chairman.
I doubt it.
You know what? You're making pretty good progress, despite yourself. And plus, you've been listening to us, so just think of the other stuff. You don't know the knowledge you have that other people don't. But if I'm going to say, I like this Manny Weber guy, I'm going to put him as a CEO, and I'm going to pay you whatever. What do CEOs make these days? $10 million. Then I call you up and say, Manny, when are you opening the business back up? And you say, when the lawyer tells me I can, I'm going to say, I hired you as CEO, not him.
Yeah.
You listen to him, you make the judgment. Don't tell me that it's his decision. Don't ever tell me that. It's your decision. Right?
You're right about that.
And as they used to say on the trading floor, if you're not the lead dog, the view never changes.
That's true.
Should I read this? Should I clean this thing up and read this thing I wrote to everybody yesterday?
Yeah, this is good.
Anyway, I was talking about Chairman Powell yesterday. I said, sorry, but listening to Chairman Powell talk to these dudes and ladies in the House, just once I would like a fully truthful answer. For instance, some dude obviously from a rural area mentions a policy, the current policy, like zero interest paid by banks, but they charge what they want, is a tad tough on savers. Paul gave some mealy-mouthed bull bleep regarding exceptional times and sacrifice, blah, blah. Why not this, the truth? I work for the banks and a few rich people, not the rubes in your district. They obviously are clueless bumpkins or they would never have elected you. I don't give a crap about the savings rate. The fact that we have talked to your rubes into giving my people money for free and paying exorbitant rates to borrow is the best thing that ever happened to the people who count. I just wonder why we didn't think of it sooner. No matter how much trouble and screwed up my group gets into, they will always be saved on the backs of your clueless voters. What don't you get? I mean, you know what? That's awful, but it's pretty close. It's real close, man.
Yeah, I think so too.
Way too close for it to be America. Do you think they actually care about the savers? How many people do you think? How many, just out of the top of your head, how many people do you think have 10, 15, 20,000 in a savings account at Citi or at Chase or someplace and have a credit card balance of 5 where they're paying 25 and getting a half of 1? They're scalping themselves. That's unconscionable,
yeah,
in a civilized society, in my mind. It's unconscionable. And yet, what's the matter with that? We're fully disclosure. We tell you how much we're screwing you, and you say, okay, which is true, obviously. And somebody will say, no, that's my savings. I'm not going to touch that, but this is my whatever. I mean, how many people do you think now, rather than take if they're home without a paycheck, the unemployment now is pretty good, so it's not as bad as it could be, even though they're printing it. How many people do you think, Maddie, are putting stuff on their credit card and running it up instead of taking the $5,000 out of their IRA, which I think you can, you know what, I'm not going to say this, but there's been some talk about letting you do that without a penalty. I don't know if that actually went through or not. I should know, or I shouldn't have mentioned it. Some of the listeners probably know. But, I mean, why would you do that when you're paying 25%? I mean,
yeah.
I mean, it's nuts. What did our guy write in yesterday about his inflation at the Walmart? You sent it to me.
Yeah, I got it here. It looks like, Tony from Wisconsin says, hey, Matt, please tell the chief that inflation is already here. Just got back from a Southwest Wisconsin Walmart and noticed that the same box of regular Little Debbie Swiss rolls, I'm sure those are popular among all Stocks and Jocks listeners,
yeah,
that I believe I paid $1.99 for in December 2019 is now $3.47, list price $3.99. What is the world coming to? Keep up the great show. Thanks and happy early 4th of July.
I mean, anybody's not noticing this, I sort of noticed it. I stopped at one of the places I like because I meet nice people there. It's the Club Lago. Well, now you're sitting outside. And maybe the city decided that the day the poor guy puts his stuff outside, the city decided to bust up the concrete on the corner of his block. So you're sitting there only because you like the guy, because you're getting overwhelmed every time somebody goes by with concrete dust, right? A glass of wine was $6 when they closed. Now it's $8, and because you're sitting at a table, they charge you tax, so now it's $9. So $6 to $9 is a real number.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I think anybody who goes into restaurants now don't even think about how much the restaurant is. They're charging for what. It doesn't matter what you eat or what you drink. I mean, if you got a place that holds 40, and now they can only put 10 or 15 in there, they have to get money. It's almost like if you give them $50 when you walk in, they'll just give you whatever you want. But you need to come up with some numbers just to have your fanny in the seat. I mean, I don't know if they're giving these people. I think my guys in the Board of Trade are telling me if we're open for 25% of the people, we're better off staying shut. And how can you have that kind of an operation for 25% of the people? Is there any, what is your bro saying? Is there any comeback in his industry?
I mean, there's starting to be a little bit, but nowhere near the point where, you know, it's back to full capacity. I mean, it's bad.
How many? There's probably a few. I went by, I dropped my buddy Greg off at Gibson's last night. They managed to grab enough of the sidewalk to where I'll say they had 20 tables, maybe 20 or 25. So it wasn't horrible, horrible. I mean, I don't know how big the inside is. It's still not as good as being open because they probably still have the people outside, but they at least had, you know, somewhat of a scrum out there. It wasn't four or five. They had quite a few. There seems to be an amazing difference in the politics here between how powerful you are with your alderman and how much of the sidewalk you can take and how much all the way around the story, whether you can take a little bit of the park across the street, whether it appears maybe that if you got those accordion doors on your place, you can open up the whole front window.
Yep. Anything with windows, they're letting you sit, let people sit at the windows.
Which means inside.
But idea being you're sort of breathing open air, which is a loose, thing. Now, obviously, I think, what is it? Beginning July 1st, you can sit people inside. Is that?
Well, no, if that date is firm, then you and I wouldn't bust up the front of the place and put one of those windows in there. But now, if when it gets to the 30th of June, Lori says, let's make it August 1st. Now, that's a different
story.
Yeah,
then you got to make a decision, right?
Yeah.
I would also say that what I'm seeing is that local officials, police, whatever, at city level, and then out in the suburbs, even more so, are not enforcing anything with the restaurants, meaning that they're letting, from what I'm seeing, they're letting restaurants just put chairs and tables anywhere they can fit them outside as long as they're spaced reasonably apart and not even 6 feet. I mean,
well, the burbs, they'll let you put picnic tables on a parking lot.
They're letting you do whatever you want, yeah. And kind of turning a blind eye, which I imagine they'll do for the remainder of the summer at least, and I think that's the right move.
Now, if you were fishing, however, Tony had her guys tossing you off the lake.
And that's strange.
That's strange. You haven't even caught dinner yet, and she's after you, for God's sake. S&P futures up 18. Down 18. NASDAQ futures down. It's going to take me a while to get this down stuff here. Down 60. Come back, Mr. David Adelman.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right
now. Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley. He's Mr. Matt Weber. Mr. David Ailman's with us as well. And S&P futures are down 23. NASDAQ futures down 29. Many of the numbers came out 1.51, right, versus 1.3 in the initial jobless. When I get done with this, let's...
Yeah, I've got initial claims 1.5 versus 1.29, continuing claims 20.54 versus 19.8.
When I'm done with this, maybe we'll ask David, we'll work through how this is working. We have Carl on tomorrow, so he has a better view, but I'm having real problems trying to figure out when it is you are considered to be unemployed is when you start getting the check. If you're still getting hospitalization from your firm, are you totally unemployed? Or I mean, Florida had the whole thing all gummed up where nobody could get their unemployment. Now, if people work through their way through the system now, or are they counted when they weren't counted? I mean, it seems like this is kind of up in the air, doesn't it? Dow futures down 242. These numbers are all over the place. DAX down, we're heading south here in Europe as well. DAX down 167, 1.3%, FTSE down 59, that's a full 1%, CAC around down 72, 1.4. These were all lower than the last time we went through here. Now the Asian numbers haven't changed. Nikkei down 100.4%, Shanghai up 3, call that flat. Hang Seng down 15, call that flat. In Shanghai and Hang Seng have been the calmest ones lately, which is sort of strange. We've got the 30-year bonds, I think, are 0.68, and we've got Germany's the same as minus 0.39, and Japan plus 0.01, so not much change there. Maddie, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Looking good still on the Edens and Kennedy. No issues on the Eisenhower. Stevenson looking good too. Dan Ryan is our slow spot. We had an earlier crash on Roosevelt Road that caused some congestion earlier, and now there's some slow travel times on both sides of the Ryan, but no accidents or issues to report. It looks like the Tri-State, there's an issue too. An off-ramp is blocked on the northbound Tri-State right at the Stevenson. Is blocked due to a crash/vehicle fire, it says here, as you're getting onto the Stevenson from the Tri-State on the northbound side. So that is affecting traffic on the Tri-State as that ramp is blocked with crews on the scene, so keep that in mind. Only other issues are off the expressways. Looks like we have a crash in the western suburbs, Route 53 at 75th Street. And then out past Naperville, Route 59 at Batavia Road, there's an accident blocking the two left lanes. And Route 59, obviously a busy artery out there, so that's going to cause some congestion on 59 at Batavia Road. But everything else looking good out there. One other thing I should mention that we talked about in hour one, State Street is closed between Randolph and Lake downtown due to a shooting investigation that happened earlier this morning. 7 CTA buses are being rerouted. But State Street is still closed as of 7:30 a.m. local time here, with that investigation continuing. Weather today, lots of sunshine, warm temperatures, a high of 80, even warmer inland. Right now it is sunny and 71 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny and hot with a high of 103 today. Right now it's clear and 79. Chief.
We've got two today, two shootings out of cars.
The State Street one, I don't know if it was out of a car or not, but the Stevenson one that happened a few hours ago, that's been cleared. But yeah, that appears to be a shooting out of a car that had the southbound Stevenson closed for a couple of hours earlier this morning.
David, how are you?
I'm fine.
You know, I have, I could probably, if I rearranged it with my Secret Service Suburban, I could probably put a machine gun that could rise out of the roof if I needed it and point it at people. What do you think?
This is a public broadcast. I wouldn't go advertising that.
You fit right in with the National Guard vehicles.
Yeah. You know who died was Jean Kennedy Smith, last surviving sister of JFK, died.
Oh wow.
Yeah. At some point, I mean, are we going to have to defend ourselves? I mean, just saying.
That's not in my league. I don't.
And that's trying
to insulate. I mean, I don't insulate my ears or my brain, but I try and certainly insulate my body from that.
SUV with at least three people inside was hit by gunfire, but no one inside was hurt. I guess that's good news. Just saying. We got the unemployment claims came in at 1.5. David, do you have a clue as to how we're counting the stuff with different states? And some people you can't get into the system, and there's nobody to call, and the definition of who's employed or not?
It's really, I mean, we've always had our issues with the way, these figures come out, especially from BLS, Bureau of Labor Statistics. You know, I mean, as soon as I found out that a lot of that stuff is just census workers knocking on doors or knocking on offices and whatever, and, oh, geez, it's raining, so we're not going to go out, I've had my doubts. Then this morning on CNBC, they had Senator Rob Portman, who, from Ohio, which I think he's one of the most even-keel, fair senators, if you believe, 90% of his words, which I do.
Is he Democrat or Republican? So we can have all the listeners decide whether they hate him or like him.
He's a Republican. But
half the people got to hate him.
Definitely very, very centrist, and I like him very much. And he was explaining, all the things, how Ohio does it differently than Florida and California and whatever. And it's difficult to understand the figures and the disincentives, that are in place, that they're introducing a legislation today, as a matter of fact, to remove some of these disincentives for going back to work. And basically, I forget exactly the figure, but it's something like $59,000 a year for a family, that if you make less than that, it pays you not to go back to work and to keep making claims. And so they're trying to remove that. Because trying to actually give an incentive for going back to work, because employers can't call these people and say, hey, come back to work. We know you want to work and we need you, because these folks are saying, hey, I can get more money by staying home and putting a product on Etsy.
I had a article that I sent around to everybody. I don't know if we tweeted it out, Maddie. If you, in Illinois, all right, if you get the full state benefit, which is what, $400 a week, maybe, or something like that, and if you get the $600 on top of it, it comes out to, I'm going to say, $2,340 an hour. And if you put a chart of what everybody in various industries makes, $2,340 an hour is well over the median, because that would be $40,000 a year, and the median's $36,000, right? Well, it'd be more than 40, because 20 would be 40, 2,000 hours in a year, right? Or 2,080 or something, from my Pullman days. So now in Washington, they're talking about a bonus to go back to work. And I was with some Audrey's friends, and it's a very self-starting group, shall we say, David. But not all their kids are. And one of the daughters immediately was getting the grand a week and was making, $600. She can't go back to work because of the safety issue. And I'm like, yeah, right. maybe, but I doubt it. I mean, but yeah, so now we've added a disincentive to go back to work. Now, when is this supposed to end, Maddie? End of July or end of June? I heard both.
It's end of July.
End of July, according to Rob Portman.
All right, so now before July, does that mean, I mean, it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense to go back to work if you're going to make $15 an hour if you're making $23 at home. I mean, I get that. The question is, if you refuse to go back, can you then get fired? And if you refuse to go back, can the employer, would-be employer, notify the unemployment office, in which case you're cut off, in which case you're really screwed.
Yeah, I don't know the answer, but those exact questions were, you know, stuff that, Mr. Portman was addressing, and evidently it's wound into the legislation. And he said, hey, look, you know, if folks, their age, they have preconditions, they can't go back, you know, to work for various, you know, health reasons, that's one thing. But if they can't go back because, you know, we're telling them you're going to make more by staying home, you know, that, and they're going to ignore this disincentive, you know, or this incentive that the government wants to put in to say, hey, go back to work, we're going to even the stakes, then that's a problem.
Yeah, but it, I'm gonna, before we get into the market here, because talk a little bit, David, the numbers that we talk about on the show, and you and I have been doing this for a long time, they're not just numbers. They affect people and they affect their lives. Now, what people should be saying, I mean, not your whole life should be revolving around it, no, but what people should be saying is, how exactly is a number that we think people just got laid off, how much they need to survive, how is that number appreciably greater than 60% of your population's making? If you look at it that way, that's unconscionable.
Right. No, I get it.
But
I just and I agree with you 100%. I'm still wondering about the source and the accuracy and the seasonal factors that they build in for most of these. I mean, I know weekly, supposedly, you know, there aren't those, you know, seasonality factors built into the algorithms, but I just question the numbers themselves.
Well, because I think, we've talked about it on the show before, I believe that somewhere along the line, David, and maybe it's because people don't have landlines, whatever it is, the difficulty of surveys or wherever you want to be. When I got laid off from Pullman, okay, you were supposed to say, and you know, that you were still looking for a job, right? And every month you were supposed to go into the unemployment office and say, hey, I went to these three people, or send it, or mail it in. I think you had to mail it in or something. And maybe you had to go in every how many months. And now people online say, I'm looking for this job, looking for that job. The thought never crossed anybody's mind that people were better off unemployed than they were working. Okay.
Right.
So now all of a sudden you put this number comes out, and somebody should say that I've been reading in the last, you know, 8 weeks now, legal articles. Some have been sent to me by listeners. Can you force somebody to go back to work, or do you got to keep paying them unemployment? Well, this wasn't a question anybody ever asked 30 years ago. Right?
Well, right.
You didn't have to ask it. You're making $100 a week on unemployment. You're making $400 a week working. Why would anybody stay home? Right? I mean, so, but now that's not the case. And the things that you think were somewhat, I'll use the term sacred, nothing's ever sacred. I was, quick example, David, is the African-American lady, there was a demonstration at the University of Chicago. And this one wasn't for the Minnesota, it had to do with affordable housing. And she's, you know, up there screaming and wearing a mask on, and you know, it was not a very well thought out, shall we say, speech. But, and everybody's sitting there going, here's somebody else wanting a handout, would be a lot of people's reaction. Correct? I mean, but yet now if you look at your debt clock and you look at the numbers on here, I think you're gonna find that since 2000, the median income went from, what, 32 to 36 or something. I'll get the exact number here. And the price of a normal house went from, median income, $30,677 to $34,128. Okay, and then there's somewhere in here, I'll find it in a second. There's a median house is, here we go, median new home, now $323, median new home in 2000, $164. I mean, whether the
so one doubled and one went up 10%.
Yeah, and so this lady, whether you liked how she was doing it or not, is spot on, right?
Right.
And now we're having like them or not, all of our people in Congress are saying, you need $23 a week to pay the bills. Oops, everybody's making 18. Okay, that's a problem. That's why there's unrest in this country, in addition to all the other stuff. Discrimination, yes. The people that are being discriminated against are getting it even worse, but it's not like everybody's not part of this, right? The fact that, you know, and that's why, you know, I think what's happening is happening. But anyway, the market. Well, what did your buddy Jay Powell, plus or minus on the market yesterday? What do you think?
Well, the week before, he was certainly minus because it crashed when he said we can't even think about raising rates. And the market said, uh-oh, how bad are things? And then the market recovered, I think, with yesterday. The NASDAQ had recovered about 80% of the, you know, big three-day break, especially last Thursday. And then yesterday it was, you know, we're going to be there, we're going to be there, we're going to be there, we're going to buy the, you know, and I'm paraphrasing, I'm not, you know, certainly quoting. We're going to buy, you know, bond and high-yield ETFs, and, you know, eventually we'll probably, you know, buy individual corporate bonds. And, you know, the market, you know, if you're short, what are you going to say? I'm going to fight the tape and the Fed when they're going to be there the whole time. So, you know, I don't know necessarily that the words changed that much, but the market's response changed substantially.
Well, I think the some people, he gave them some reassurances that they do intend to go away when they can. You know, I think he did an okay job doing all that stuff. It's just,
yeah, I do. Again, the words were almost the same, and yet the response was different because, you know, perhaps whatever, he toned it a certain way because he saw the market's response the previous week, which, you know, wasn't much different other than he said the same thing the previous week, other than that one line, we won't think to think, and the market went nuts over that. You know, but otherwise, and he didn't repeat that line, but otherwise he said, hey, the Fed's going to be here. We're going to backstop. We're going to, as long as it takes and with whatever tools we got. And the other thing I think that he did, you know, emphasize was that, you know, he didn't say it was impossible, but he said, you know, we've talked a lot about negative interest rates and we've looked around and seen that they didn't work. Again, I'm paraphrasing. And we don't think that, at least for the foreseeable future, as far as we can look forward, those don't seem to be appropriate for this country. And I think the market took solace in that.
Matty, fire away at a question.
Yeah, we had a Twitter question for David, and you can follow us on Twitter at Stocks, the letter N, Jocks. He says, does David have short, intermediate, and long-term targets for the dollar?
You know what? I'll look at that. I will absolutely look at that. I think with the easing and whatever, I mean, I think it's down to roughly around 4% or 5% for the year. And I think it's in a range more than anything. I think it's closer, while all this, you know, low interest rate, you know, stuff by the Fed is going to certainly put a lid on any rallies. I don't really think that there's that much more to the downside. Europe and certainly Asia have their own problems. So ex-yen, which, you know, is still looked at as kind of the haven currency, things are great, you sell yen. If things are terrible, you buy yen. I don't know why that would be, but that's the way it is. But ex-yen, I would say the dollar has maybe 2% more to the downside over the next 3-4 months. Can't really forecast for a year because, you know, with an election and perhaps a new constituency in Congress, I can't forecast that far. But I'd say up until the election, maybe 2% more to the downside in the dollar, and maybe 3 or 4% to the upside. I really think it's more range bound than anything else.
Are we talking about any values here, other than the fact that who's throwing more of their currency out there, and it's a race to the bottom?
Yeah, well, and that's what's going to put, you know, a lid on foreign, you know, like the euro, or not so much the Swiss because it still has a semblance of even currency type thing, but pound. Well, pound isn't, you know, really part of the EU anymore, supposedly, but, you know, it's still certainly tied and affected. But say the euro, I just, you know, when you say, hey, you know, next Monday the European Council is going to meet, and over the next 6 years, you know, we're going to do $1.1 trillion in extra stimulus. You know, we're going to just do what the U.S. Fed's doing. It's certainly going to put a lid on rallies in the euro. So, again, I think it's range-bound. We're more toward the bottom of the range in the dollar than the top, but I don't think it's really going to go through the bottom or the top. Just a range-bound issue. Another 2% down, you buy the dollar. 3-4% up. I don't know that we're going to get that, but if you did, I think I'd sell the dollar.
What when you hear the questioning like yesterday, and some people were obviously concerned about the incredible growth in the balance sheet. And we're not even attempting to go borrow this money anymore. We're just printing it. In my view,
right?
He dodged the questions, you know, pretty well. He's pretty good at it. Even he. As we have the money supply now, $18 trillion here, which is pretty incredible when you think about it. Even he has to have something in his mind, or that group of governors. I mean, let's pick something absurd. Are they willing to go $100 trillion, like Weimar? Or, I mean,
you follow it more. As much, and I'm not just saying this, as anybody I've ever seen or heard, and you seem to stimulate the conversation over the last year or two when virtually nobody but you was paying attention, so you would have the handle a lot better than I. I know that the pace of increase in the last 2-3 months, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, seems unprecedented.
The last 3 months is a 65% year-over-year increase in M2.
Has that ever happened before?
No, not even close.
I didn't think so. Again, I'm not a historical student like you, but to the best of my knowledge, I've never seen it.
I'm going to go back and dig through my stuff here today. Might have a minute. I have the money supply numbers all the way back, and I actually went through and calculated the year increases. I'm going to say some of the biggest year increases back in the early 70s when we caused that inflation was maybe 12.5%, not 30 or 40. We're not even on the same page, that's when I used to, you know, do my trades on the floor, David, when there were no computers on the floor. I'd have to sit there and go, all right, this stock went to 100. Do I still want this price on this spread or not? Now, some spreads, the answer would be yeah. If somebody gave it to you 100, you'd be real happy. But I mean, even he must think there has to be. I mean, Matty and I have been talking about this now for 3 days. There has to be a date in Powell's mind and that group saying. The rate we're going, the COVID, whatever it is, protests, you name it, at the rate we're going, we got to cover this crap till September 1st, till September 30th. There's got to be an end date in mind, because there's no way any of those people, they're not idiots, there's no way any of those people thinks you're going to do $3 trillion a quarter until the cows come home, not knowing where the cows are.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I certainly don't want to guess what's in his or the other Fed governors, you know, especially the voting members, you know, have in their mind. But I think you're pretty spot on, and I'm not just saying that. I think, you know, they would like to have some, I don't want to call it an end date, but, a date in mind where, you know, the rate of increase, you know, declines somewhat. And I'd guess it's somewhere around September 30th. I would guess, and pure guess, that, you know, before the election, they want to tone it down a little bit. And I think, you know, just some of these phase three trials with the virus, you know, with Johnson & Johnson and Moderna, you know, starting at UIC, you know, next month in phase three of Johnson & Johnson. I think they're hopeful that if they at least get, you know, a window, a light through a window where they can say, hey, look, you know, unemployment is coming down. Weekly jobless claims are coming down. People are returning to work. We don't know the side effects or efficacy of these, you know, drugs, but, you know, it's something. It can create some optimism or whatever. Maybe we can tone down the rate of increase in that end, too.
Yeah, I mean, I was, Manny and I was concerned that when you start seeing people, if you jump from, you know, the end of July to the end of August, you know, that's okay, I guess. If you jump from the end of August till, say, the middle of September, at least you're getting more finite. I'm seeing people, this is what's bothered me. I'm seeing people saying, oh, no, we're not coming back like the end of the year, and if that, maybe. Now the Chicago Public Schools don't want to go back next year. Is that just teachers want to get paid? There's no way on earth you don't open in the schools in September. There's no way on earth you don't open the schools in September at this point. Now they're talking about not. I mean, how do you?
Well, I don't know about Chicago Public Schools, but they had, you know, at various universities, William and Mary and University of North Carolina and whatever, and they had those, you know, presidents and deans on, and they said, you know, it may be a staggered thing where you go, you know, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Tuesday, Thursday you do online, and then, you know, we'll take half the population, you know, and do it Tuesday, Thursday, and stay home Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and that kind of thing. And, you know,
all right, Dave, we got to go. Save that for Monday, but you're right. Most of them are at least going to make a shot at it. SP Futures down 19. NASDAQ Futures down only 8 now. They were down more. Be right back tomorrow morning, Stocks and Jocks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTIsecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.